Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. That's Sarah over there.
It's me.
And there's Chris.
All right, gang.
Now, many people don't like change. However, this is not true of everybody. Some people embrace change and are always looking for the next fad or phase. Today, we're answering this question. Is change exciting or a struggle?
I find it exciting. Ooh. I do love change. Mm. I don't think there's much I don't like, look forward to changing. And that includes the things that normally are really annoying. So let's say I had to move house, which is incredibly annoying. Mm-hmm. Apart from the process of actually moving.
Yeah, that's annoying.
I would find it exciting. I'd be like, oh, cool. What's next? What can we get next? I am naturally very optimistic. So I'm naturally thinking it's going to be okay or it's going to be good. But change for me is quite exciting. I think I have to really be intentional and conscious of being present, because my mind can constantly be off in the future. Mm-hmm. I remember once my wife and I, we spent 7 weeks traveling around the US, and we'd planned this trip for years, saved up money and stuff like that. During the trip, I'm planning our next holiday.
Oh,
and
she's like, no.
Can you just be here now? We've saved up, planned.
Enjoy it.
We're like, yeah, exactly. So yeah, I do enjoy it. But it does have its downsides.
That's funny you say that about. I think you've hit on something there straight away, Christopher. You talked
straight
about that
out the gate.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, we're not messing around today.
No.
Embracing change, and you're excited for that next thing because you're always looking to the future. But perhaps maybe you sort of miss a little bit of the present. See, I am very much someone who lives in the present. It can take me a while to get on board with some new things because I rinse the present for what it's worth.
You rinse
every
the
little
present.
Absolutely wring it for all its goodness, and I essentially, as the present, as the good ship present is sailing through the water and it's about to become the past.
You're not even sailing.
Yeah, exactly. It's about the anchor's gone down. We have a tiny bit of movement still on there. I have to again quickly jump ship into what the next sort of present is, if you see what I mean. That's my thing. That's what I have to do. Because I'm sitting there on the boat and I'm thinking, what's the matter? It's fine. We're having a good time, aren't we? And then as I notice that I'm not the last one, but a lot of people have left, I'm like, okay, that's my cue.
All the rats are gone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way you see it, though. Yeah. Well, they all jump ship.
They're my friends as well. So, so yeah, that,
the
that's...
benefit of that with you, the good thing of that with you, though, mate, is that I think when people have conversations with you, you are present even in that conversation.
On behalf of those people, I've never seen you
check your phone.
Yeah, on behalf of those people, they absolutely love it. Let's be clear about that. But no, that's very kind of it. But it's pros and cons to everything. So you're already in the future going, ha, look at those suckers. Look at old Marcus on that naff boat that's about to run ashore and he's about to fall forward as it hits the sand. And I'm like, which boat is Chris on? That's got to be the one that's the next desired boat to be on, I think.
It's the one without a hole in the bottom.
Yes,
while
exactly.
I'm drifting along in the flotsam of the SS past.
You've run aground. You're looking, you're just... You're,
I'm stranded on the desert island going, guys!
You're hanging out with a volleyball. That's what you're doing.
he's my good friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what about you, Sarah? In that sort of scenario, we've just sort of quickly kind of painted quite poorly, perhaps. Does that resonate with you, any of that?
I joke, but I definitely... I sometimes feel a little hamstrung by the past. So change for me can be challenging. I don't hate it, but it sometimes takes a bit more effort. It doesn't always come naturally. I love, a bit like Chris, I love the kind of possibilities of change. Mm. So I always like fresh start. So, you know, I was that kid who new year at school, like new pencil case, new pens and all that stuff.
Do you love a new
university
notebook?
Oh,
fresh,
I love
first page.
A new notebook. Oh my goodness. Like, new notebooks are my love language.
Sarah loves notebooks. That's just obvious. You know.
Oh my goodness. Like, I've got stationery addict written all over me, haven't I? Come on.
Yeah, you would write in your notebook, I need to get a new notebook.
Exactly. The to-do list, top of that, new notebook. Mm-hmm. I love the fresh start because I like the idea of there are so many possibilities. Think of all the things I could write in the notebook. Or, you know, the new job, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? What am I going to achieve? Who am I going to meet? That's a big thing, as
you
I
could
do
write that book
like that
you've been on about for years.
Yeah, one day that's going to get written and you won't be laughing then, Chris.
Why is it going to be a sad story, is it?
Well, we shall see. I think it does. It takes some effort sometimes because I think I need a little nudge. And once I've got the nudge and I'm like, right, we're going. Like, you know, Chris, you were saying about moving house. If you said to me like, right, okay, we're going to go somewhere better, it would still take me a moment just to go, oh, well, we're going to have to change everything. We're going to have to pack everything up. We're going to have to...
Yeah, I think moving house is quite a big one because there's so much... Like, it's just such a hassle. It's a stressful
change, but it is often for good.
Yeah, I think I find change sort of quite difficult sometimes because I think one of the reasons is that we focus on the negative aspects of change, you know. And I think high risk people are probably more likely to embrace change. That would sort of be I don't think that's a particular profound thought. I think it's probably fairly obvious, but I sometimes do struggle with change. This is going to sound absolutely ridiculous, but music tastes. I love the Britpop scene in the mid 90s, Oasis and Pulp and Blur and all that kind of stuff. It took me a few years to move on from that when clearly that kind of fad had gone and people had moved on, and I would kind of be a bit, but it's not as good as that. And I think I can be a little bit, it's not as good as that. And then along came the likes of the Strokes, Libertines, and I got into that and sort of began to move on a bit. But yeah, I suppose sometimes that's a danger of living in the past, is that sometimes I can find myself, that's when I'm maybe in a bit of a rut, I'm living in the past and going, well, it wasn't as good as 5 years ago when this happened, or do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. It's very, very true. I'd say that's more with trivial things.
Yeah, but I think it's, there is a thing, isn't there, about... there's five categories of change or people in society where they so you've got the innovators, like the first ones out of the door. They're the ones that are the risk takers. They're the ones that are obsessed almost with change.
The founding fathers, Chris.
Yeah, they're the people, and as you said, they're risk takers. They are, you know, they're happy with setbacks. Apparently they usually have substantial resources behind them, so therefore setbacks don't hurt as much.
Well,
then you've got the
describing the United States of America there, aren't you?
The whole culture.
God bless you.
Early adopters. I think I'm an early adopter. I don't think I'm an innovator, because I don't think I'm that. But the early adopters, you have a great you're watching these guys and you're seeing if it could float. So to go back to our early analogy. Okay. This is not me bigging myself, but often respected by your peers and sought out by innovators, because I think they're like, okay, you're weighing this up and you're up for change, but you're not as reckless as these other guys.
Okay.
Then there's the thing called the early majority, which is where you get it just before the mainstream. So just before your dad buys a pair of skinny jeans type thing. you've done it for a few years. And they often take time to make a decision, but they're up for it.
Yeah.
Then you've got your late majority,
yeah,
which are often skeptical. Mm-hmm. And they're just, you know, you're wearing skinny jeans the same time as your dad. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your laggards, which are your traditionalists. They're the ones who are suspicious and they're fixated on the past. So I wonder though, Marcus, which one of those you would fit into after what you just said.
Well, one might argue that the laggards have infiltrated some political movements around the world, but let's not...
That's a really good point.
Anyway, let's not... I'm so sorry, Chris. There was the latecomers, the late majority.
Yeah, so
what was the one
early
before that?
So you've got innovators, they're the first out the gate.
Yeah, not me.
Early adopters.
No, let's get to me.
Early adopters, and then the early majority,
yes,
the late majority, and then the laggards.
So I'm probably I would either be early or late majority. That's where I would sort of see myself. Yeah. It depends on the thing, but that's... See, I would get Facebook a few years after... I was on Facebook a few years after everybody else was, that kind of thing.
So you would have been still on MySpace whilst everyone transferred over. And then you would have found out they're all on there, and then you would have gone... I remember that being a thing. I do remember my friends going, have you heard about this new thing called MySpace? And I was like, no, show me now.
Yeah.
And I was straight over.
I'm still on it. I think it's going to come back full circle. No, I...
Did Justin Timberlake buy it?
He did. Yes, he did. I think that's right, yeah. My goodness. No, I know what you mean. So, yes, it'd be the early or late majority. I would put myself in either of those brackets.
Yeah, what about you, Sarah?
I would say I'm early majority, apart from every now and then, there'll be something that I'm like, I'm not changing it. No, I will not do it. And it's usually related to technology. Like,
That was one of the categories I thought of.
You know when, like, Apple, every other day are like, oh, you need to update your operating system on your phone again. And I'm like, no, I won't. And I'll press no, until one day I accidentally press yes and it updates. And I had a similar thing with, this goes back quite a way now, with getting WhatsApp. So I was a very late WhatsApp adopter. I don't know. I was like, I can text people. And at that point, like, a lot of people just would Facebook message you. You can call me. You can email me. I don't need another way for people to contact me. And when I finally did get it, I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty useful.
So there's something around social pressure there, isn't there?
Yes.
Because everybody's on a certain platform. And you're like,
I hate doing it because everyone else is doing it. I want to do it because I want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. Technology, I think, is... I think due to technology, change happens a lot quicker these days. I mean, I always think that generational gaps are shorter because of technology these days. And I think... it must be very hard, well, for a lot of people throughout generations. You know, obviously they have different challenges and different things to consider. But it must be quite hard being an older person. There has been so much change. There's been more change in the 21st century than it probably already than there was in the 20th century, you know, you could argue. Yeah. Which is madness, and we're only 21 years into it. So I think but then for me, though, to give a couple of examples, when camera phones... See, this is my odd kind of viewing of this. When I was a student in the early noughties, I remember a friend of mine got a camera phone. And I remember just going, what have you done that for? Like, very few other people have got that. Why do you need a flipping camera on your phone? Whereas I should be thinking, that's incredible.
You've got a camera around your neck.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I should be thinking, that's incredible. You know, that is blimey. Where's that going to lead? And of course, you know, I actually ended up having his old phone. He then moved on and I got his old camera phone. But then with Spotify, I had an early account. In fact, I still have a free account. Yeah, yes. I still have a free account on Spotify because I was one of, I say one of as if there was like 10 of us. You know, there was obviously...
Exclusive club.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But there was, however many people it was, they couldn't fit into a room, I'm sure, to have Spotify early on. So I still have a free account.
They did limit the number, though.
So they did,
listeners,
yeah.
Do write in. And there was like a definitely, I don't know, 10,000, the first 10,000 get a free account or something.
Yeah, but I was on board very early on with that, very quickly, which was interesting. But I mean, I'll ask you this, Chris, because I know what the answer is, but have you ever changed your diet? Because that requires a lot of discipline sometimes.
My diet? I've settled on... more now that fits my personality type. So I'm kind of all or nothing.
Yeah.
So actually having a consistent, healthy, balanced diet, which one should have, doesn't... I'm just not... I would do that for a couple of weeks, usually because my wife's making food, and then I stop. So so I will do like the 5-2 diet often because I'm like, right, that means 2 days off, 5 days on. But yeah, I would change my diet. I think...
Wait on, what's 5 days off and 2 days on? Explain that to people.
So you have 2 days where you fast. And
in
then
a
you
row?
Have 5 days where you... Yeah.
You so, don't eat for 2 days?
No.
That's incredible.
I think the pure... Like, in the purest sense, 5-2 is just having 2 days that are really calorie restricted, right?
Yeah, you can have some. Like, I mean, yeah. I don't. But as you said, like, I think you can have like 500 calories, which people would say shouldn't... They should be like fruit and veg and nuts and things like that. So, and you would graze throughout the day as well. I'm just like, because I'm all or nothing. I'm like, well, no, because if I do that, then I may as well just eat. So,
I can't. I think that's. I take my hat off to you.
For me, one of the things I was thinking of with this was kind of location, and especially in cities where kind of like there's latest places to live, isn't there? There's like the new up and coming place to live, and could you get in there first? And you know, if one has the resources to buy property, then you're always told to get in there to buy property. Mm-hmm. But there's always a risk because those places are usually quite impoverished to start with as well. That's why property prices are low. And I remember years ago reading an article on Camden before the kind of explosion. Maybe was it noughties when it really kind of Camden was the cool place to be.
Bit of context for Camden, Chris. Some people, not everybody lives in London.
Okay, so Camden was, I think, in the noughties. It would be like where Russell Brand and the Mighty Boosh would hang out, and all the
Amy Winehouse lived there.
Yeah, Amy Winehouse, lots of cool music venues and bars and places like that. But it was also known to be a little bit rough in certain areas, and, and so, like a drug sort of issue. So the issue is you could get in an area that was deemed to be cool early and buy property, but there were risks associated with it, which goes back to the innovators. They're happy with risk. Or are you someone who's like, I like the idea of that, but I'm not going to move there because it's too risky. So,
I think you make a good point. I mean, the two things you were talking about there with Camden, the latter is still definitely true.
as soon as you get out of the tube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What about more sort of bigger decisions that one would make? Because I mean, changing your diet, obviously that can have an impact, and that can be good and so on. I mean, for me, it's funny. Some things I can change very quickly. I met my wife. Well, obviously, when I met her, she wasn't my wife, but I met her and was married.
I actually don't know who she is.
I was married within a year. So I can't be that, opposed to change, if you see what I mean. Because that was quite a big change. I mean, it was just within a year, just within 365 days. And at no point did I sort of panic or the whole thing flowed for me. It was very, very wonderful. It felt like the most wonderful and incredible thing in the world, and also the most natural and normal, and I just went with it. I felt I would be stupid, or I would be getting in the way of the flow of things here, and I had none of me 0% of me was even wanting to go. And as I say, this is not some starry-eyed butterflies thing. As I said, it felt the most wonderful, but the most natural and normal thing. We've never looked back. It's been brilliant. Over 4 years married now, that is a hell of a change.
But when you see that, you're seeing that in isolation from the rest of your kind of dating life, where you've got there for a reason. Do you know what I mean? Like you've learned who you are, you've learned what relationships work for you. So yes, that is an impressively quick turnaround in isolation. But surely that is because you've learned so much throughout your life.
Possibly, but it's still. But some people drag their heels massively with this sort of thing, or say drag their heels. I mean, but as you say, nothing. But nothing exists in isolation. So when somebody is open to change or not open to change, well, that their personality makeup might dictate that. But their nature and nurture, all that kind of business. Yeah, you people perhaps more predisposition to certain things and whatnot. But your experiences are a huge part of that culture you've grown up in, et cetera, et cetera.
It's interesting you're talking about sort of big life changes. One of the things I think I would put in there as well is changing jobs. And that, it's quite interesting. One time when I changed job, I was working at a company that I absolutely loved. I had tons of friends there and I had no intention of ever leaving. Well, obviously, at some stage, but it really wasn't on the cards. And then a friend sent me a job ad somewhere else, and it really sounded like the perfect job. But I was like, why would I give up this place that I love, my friends, da da da? And as people who've listened to the show before will know, all of us are Christians, and so this is one of those times when you go, oh, I actually do need a bit of divine guidance on this one. So I sort of prayed about it, and I just said, like, right, God. If this is the job for me, it needs to be so obvious that I just can't even get away from it. And so I went through, I actually put the application in late, got an interview. Thought I'd flunked the first interview, got through that. Thought I'd flunked the second one, got offered the job and was like, okay, yeah, I'm kind of getting it. I'm kind of getting it, but I'm still not sure. I'm still not convinced. God, I need some more. And so when they said, you know, we're going to give you the job, how much money are you looking for? So, you know, I sort of bumped it up a little bit.
Yeah, they just
went in substantially higher. And I was like, yep, okay, I'm taking the hint. I'm taking the hint. I'll take the job, fine. So for me, sometimes you need a little bit of, a little sign or a little bit of prompting from something to kind of make you feel really secure in your decision. Because, yeah, for me, I'm not sure I would have ever even applied. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I just really wasn't sure about it. So sometimes you need the nudge, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with that, yeah. There's a psychologist called James Prochaska who said that behavioural changes are rarely discrete or single event things. We tend to view it that way, but they're not. It's more often not. The behavioural change occurs gradually over time. And in Psychology Today, which I often click on when I'm researching this show,
they noted that Psychology Today.
It's mad, isn't it? Whenever I research these subjects, this thing keeps going. Anyway, they talked about the trans-theoretical model of behavioural change.
That's my created, favourite one.
It's a real page turner, but it was created by Prochaska, and he identifies the various stages through which individuals move when attempting to adjust old habits or form new behaviours. Mm. And a linear progression through the stages is not the norm. That's what we think. It tends to be you move back and forth through the stages until the change becomes sort of fully established. So that's why when people try and go cold turkey on something, if they're trying to change something, it doesn't happen, because even if they go back a little bit to an old habit or, you know, an undesirable behavior, it doesn't necessarily have to be anything untoward or particularly naughty. But if it happens again, oh crap, I'm back to square one. No. You're in that adjusting period. The line from A to B is seldom straight. It sort of zigzags and can go back and forth and all that, as long as you get there. And you have the stages are the pre-contemplation stage, when an individual becomes aware of a change that needs to happen or is to be desired. The contemplation stage, an internal debate begins to happen on whether or not to pursue the change. The preparation stage, an individual moves into that stage after committing to the change in the immediate future. Then you have the action stage, quite obviously the plans have been put into action, change is occurring. And then the maintenance stage, which is the change has become a reality and backsliding, if you like, into one's old ways is now less likely or less frequent. And when you hear about that, I sort of go, oh, that actually makes it much easier and less daunting to change. Because I think if people think of changing, you think, right, okay, you're doing this, stop doing that forever. That's done with. Now
if
you move
over
here.
If you ever do it again,
exactly,
you've failed.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
No.
Yeah. And so, therefore, the idea of trying to change for the better, for a desired behaviour, it actually becomes less daunting. It becomes less of a struggle, and you can hopefully become a bit more. I mean, excited may be the right word. In some cases, it may not be, but it's certainly better than staying in a bit of a rut, perhaps.
Do you want to hear a change tip?
Yes.
If you are trying to change something, if you're trying to change a habit, the best time to do it is when something else in your life is changing. So if you're moving house or you're changing job or something. And so for me, when I moved house, I'm a devil for the snooze button. I don't know about you guys, but I could snooze it for hours, every 5 minutes. But when I moved house, I said, right, I'm not going to be a multiple snoozer anymore. Mm. And there's something about that change in routine or change in location or whatever it might be that makes it much easier to change the habit. And now I have one snooze and I'm up.
Yeah, you see that? Use Sarah as your inspiration.
It's funny you say that, because with our son, their routines change all the time. And we've just read that. When you want to change something, I don't know, you're going to drop a nap or a feed or something, do it when you're on holiday or visiting family, because there's so much change going on. It just confuses them. So I'm glad you're still on the same trajectory as my one-year-old.
He and I have a lot in common.
But going back to what you were saying, both of you, do you think then there's a fear of failure that is attached to change? So actually, by going back and forth, like you said, Marcus, and realizing, I know there's a great phrase, you should celebrate progress, not perfection. Mm. And that actually, if we know that it's not linear, then then actually it takes away that fear of failure, because you realize that progress is really important and you don't have to be perfect in this new place of change.
Yeah, I totally think that. I think that it's not, things are not binary, you know, it's not either crap or good, if you see what I mean. So if you're trying to quit smoking, for example, I mean, I can only imagine, but if you're trying to quit smoking and you go a week and then you have a cigarette on a Friday night or something, you don't suddenly start beating yourself over the, you know, whipping yourself over the back and going, oh, I'm rubbish, I'm back, I'm a smoker again. It's kind of, well, don't worry, you've done well. Yeah. It's the shame often that drags it down. For those kind of behaviours, if you're trying to change, it is that you feel like it's a game of snakes and ladders, you know, and you go all the way back to square one. And yes, it is like that, but it, not necessarily. Just keep rolling the dice, baby.
I've heard quite a good analogy related to that. So I think I've thought about it in terms of, like, you know, healthy eating. Mm. Of if you do kind of slip up or feel like, you know, oh, I didn't quite make a good choice there, you know, to not beat yourself up. The analogy I was told is, imagine you drop your phone on the floor and there's a little tiny crack in the screen. You don't then throw the phone on the floor again, stamp on it and completely ruin it. You just go, oh, well, that's one little thing. I move on. Yeah. So don't stamp on your phone, guys.
Yeah. It's basically that you don't press the self-destruct button.
Exactly. One little thing is just not, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah. A woman called Erica Anderson wrote about change in Forbes, and she had some advice. She said, I suggest you try this. The next time a change is proposed to you, notice how you talk to yourself about it. And if your internal dialogue is trending towards difficult, costly, weird, see how you can instead speak to yourself about the change that could be genuinely easy, rewarding, or normal. You may be surprised at how that simple internal shift can immediately make you feel more open to and curious about the possibilities inherent in the change. And I think that is something that we often think, oh, change is coming, you know, this, the, where I live isn't the same as it used to be, or where this, that, and it's bad, and this is being attacked, and whenever you, whenever something changes, you, something is lost. I mean, there's no two ways about that. Sometimes that change has to be mourned, because you you might have enjoyed that, and you kind of go, oh, well. Sometimes the change is forced upon you. Okay, so what is your action then going to be? But actually, sometimes the change happens, and it brings positives. Billy Connolly once said that people often say, oh, well, I miss the old days, it was better, that, and he said, I realise I miss my youth is what it is. And I think one has to be careful that you need to adapt to change as you grow older, otherwise a midlife crisis can strike, and or bitterness or can happen, or you miss out on new things.
Well, you also start to just judge other people who are different more and more. So, you know, the older I get, I don't want to judge younger people because they wear massive feeler trainers. Do you know what I mean? You just... Well, you know,
I would always judge people who wear bucket hats. I'm sorry.
People judge each other by what they look, because it doesn't look like when we were kids, although it does actually.
It looks exactly like when we were kids right now.
Yeah. But as you said, like, you just got to roll with it and, like, you know, allow change to happen, and like you said also earlier, Sarah, like, it doesn't have to happen to you if you don't want it to, you know, Marcus. There's no shame that you love listening to, you know, Blur and Oasis and stuff, but it's just that, like, you know, don't, if someone says, I've got new music for you, you don't want to go, well, I don't listen to it because I only listen to this one type of music.
Exactly. Well, Chris, let's end on a Britpop reference. As you said, you've just got to roll with it, haven't you?
Yes, nice, well picked up.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen.
Can't get anything past him.
Well, thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. It's an absolute pleasure. Find us on social media, on Insta and Twitter at AQQAPod. We sometimes ask you the question so you can be a part of the show. Until next week, though, thanks very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week.